Welcome back to the Sundance Reel. And we're back with Sasha Jenkins, the director of Fresh Dressed. The film is described by Sundance as a fascinating, fun-to-watch chronicle of hip-hop, urban fashion, and the hustle that brought oversized pants and graffiti-drenched jackets from Orchard Street to high fashion's catwalks and middle America shopping malls. So, Sasha, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I gave the one-sentence description of your film, but just tell us a little bit what the film's about.
The film is ultimately a back doorway to tell the history and evolution of hip-hop. Fashion has always been an important part of what the culture represented. If you look at, you know, many of the early pioneers of the culture, how they dressed was extremely important. And that importance has not been lost over, you know, the 40 years that hip-hop has been in existence. And it went from something that was very humble and crude, with young people creating their own looks. There were no brands that catered to them specifically. So a part of the expression and a part of being an individual, because in hip-hop culture, being an individual is more important than anything else, how you dressed and how you presented yourself was really important. And in the time since, you know, there have been multiple brands created by rappers and other folks who, you know, smartened up and said, hey, no one's really catering to us. Why don't we start making clothing for this audience?
So the name of the film, obviously, is Fresh Dressed. Mm-hmm. Tell us what that means. Give us a description of fresh.
Well, you know, in the hip-hop world, you know, fresh was a term that was thrown around by young folks in, you know, late 70s, early 80s. It just meant, you know, the notion of something being brand new, fresh out of the box, you know, something that people can see has, you know, for some reason in America, you know, capitalism and poor people, the idea of something new is sort of connected to monetary value. So mm-hmm. when something is fresh, it is connected to the notion of, you know, money, something new. I had the ability to purchase something. So, I mean, it's not just that, but then it later turned into this notion of looking really nice, looking really clean,
right,
looking, you know, exceptional.
I like the way the film opens up, where you kind of touched on, it kind of provides a backdrop on the history of dress and the importance of dress as a message mm-hmm. Within the community, going all the way back to slavery or so, when you know, the concept of the Sunday dress, you look your best.
Yeah, Sunday
you
know, best.
The Sunday best, mm-hmm. and how that kind of evolved from that. Talk a little bit about...
Yeah, I mean, you know, most people listening to this, when you hear someone say, hey, put on your Sunday best, you're thinking, I'm going to look really nice for church or something like that. But during the time of slavery in America, there were certain states where it was mandated that slave masters had to purchase one nice outfit so their slaves can go to church. Now, you know, that's complicated for many reasons, especially when you consider that most of the slaves had their own indigenous religions that came from Africa that had absolutely nothing to do with Christianity. So when you consider that that term still prevails even in the inner cities, this notion of Sunday best, and
right.
when you think about where it comes from, you know, it's something that a lot of people didn't know and haven't really considered, and hopefully my film will help open some eyes.
No, it did. That was an interesting take on that. And then you say as it evolves. So where's the concept of fresh dress, say, in the 50s and 60s? How does that get started?
Well,
how's it evolved during those decades?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always been a correlation between fashion and music,
yeah,
especially in the African-American community. You know, music is something that is a very deep, personal mode of expression. And oftentimes, you know, how you dressed helped to accentuate that. And again, you know, when you're dealing with folks who are disenfranchised, who don't have much, the notion of keeping up appearances, you know, it's the idea, it's almost totally in tune with this whole sort of Instagram world, where people take photos of plates of food or really expensive things and they're smiling, but really what's going on is not what's really going on. What's really going on is you're sad. You know, no one presents an unhappy face on Instagram. And I think when you're dealing with folks in the inner city and people who are poor, no one wants to put on a face of I'm unhappy or I'm suffering. People want to present themselves in a way that makes them feel triumphant.
Yeah, I mean, that some of them talked about they had racks of Polo and Armani and Tommy Hilfiger, but no furniture in their apartment.
Yeah.
You know, that was the dichotomy there.
Yeah.
But it was the street as kind of a somewhat described as the street became a catwalk of fashion and style and individualism, like you talked about that.
Well, New York is a city where people ride the subway. You know, it's not like California or other places where you're kind of insulated and you're in your car and you're not interacting with people. So you're on the subway and you're seeing, you know, people from all over the place. And what was interesting that speaks to how times have changed, you know, growing up in New York City in the 70s, 80s, you could look at someone and based on how they were dressed, this person is from Brooklyn, this person is from Queens. You can tell regionally where people were from, largely because back then, in terms of distribution of clothing, you know, certain manufacturers would deliver certain cuts or certain colors, colorways or whatever in certain regions, in different boroughs. So a lot of it reflected what they had access to.
Right.
But if you flash forward to what's happening now with fashion, because of the internet, you know, everything is, you know, you can order anything from anywhere in the world. You're not limited in terms of your color palette or how you want to dress. You know, the world is a lot more, you know, wide open.
Right.
Sure.
So Park City kids can dress like L.A. urban or New York style.
Or punk rock or anything. You know,
right.
Before you had to be affiliated directly with a subculture. You know, I grew up, I was involved with, you know, hip-hop and graffiti and skateboarding and punk rock at a time when there weren't many people like me who were intimately involved with all of these subcultures. Now, because of the internet and because of the way the world has changed, kids have access to learning a little bit about everything. So now kids are extremely intelligent in terms of having a basic conversation about punk rock or hip-hop or skateboarding. But when I was coming up, how I dressed reflected my dedication to these subcultures and informed who I was and
right.
who I would go on to be. And now it's different.
Yeah.
So was your motivation for making this particular documentary personal, your personal experience with it, or was there something else that kind of sparked this film?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. You know, I was a journalist for many years writing about hip-hop, writing about music in general, published my own magazines, and I felt that, you know, this was a story, you know, the hip-hop story has been told lots of different ways, but this was one way that it hadn't been told. And for me, you know, I moved to New York when I was really young. I moved there in 1977, and my mother told me to go outside and play, and I had a football, and everyone else had magic markers, and they were dancing, and there was music, and I was like, what is this?
Right.
And all of that stuff that was just an extension of what we did as kids would go on to create this industry where people have made millions and millions and millions and zillions of dollars. Many of those people aren't of the community. So for me, it's a real privilege to be who I am, to have the platform I have to tell these kinds of stories. And other people will tell these stories, but sometimes the nuances that you're going to get from someone who actually is of the culture is going to ultimately do a service to us all in telling. The story's never going to be perfect, but I think the closer we can get to the story is going to come by way of being close to the people who are close to the story.
Yeah, and you interview a number of individuals, obviously, who are both within the style at the times mm-hmm. as kids, and now are in the fashion world or so, or the entertainment world, and they tell their own. It's a great story.
Thank you.
Yeah, tell us about some of those characters that you talked to.
Well, going back, you know, again, the film starts as far back as slavery and the whole notion of Sunday best, and then it lands in the South Bronx in the 1970s, which, you know, looked like, you know, World War II France right. or something. You know, there was a great deal of white flight, you know, a lot of arson. The educational system in New York was terrible, and the city was essentially bankrupt, and the South Bronx was just an afterthought. So in this environment, you have this rise of gangs. These gangs were inspired by the Hells Angels and bikers and stuff like that, but because they were of color, they couldn't join these gangs. So then they started creating their own gangs, and how they fashioned themselves, or the garments they wore were inspired by what the bikers wore.
Right.
So they essentially looked like bikers. Eventually, there's a gang truce, someone dies, and it leads to the climate on the street changing. So it wasn't really about gangs. It was more about this rise of this cultural movement that would become hip-hop. But they applied this sort of self-stylized, you know, taking what was put on the gang jackets and putting them on sweatshirts. And so it represented their breakdance crew or their graffiti crew. And it was more about, like, cultural expression than sort of this expression of violence. And so then that would lead to, you know, unfortunately, there was a crack epidemic in New York City that made a lot of poor people either even way more poor or extremely rich. So you have this new class of people who have a lot of money. Who do they look to? Rich folks who are wearing Gucci and Prada and all this stuff. So they aspire to buy that stuff. And then all of a sudden there's this industrious designer in Harlem named Dapper Dan who takes all of those patterns and makes these very unique sort of looks at what these other folks are making. And as he said, he quote-unquote blackenized it. And he made it something that spoke to, you know, the community where he was from. And Dapper Dan has a huge personality. So there are so many people in the film who ultimately were, I liken it to soul food in that, well, what was soul food? Soul food came from the scraps that the slave masters left to the slaves.
Right.
Chitlins, you know, what is that? It's intestines, you know, the stuff no one else wanted. Well, what do? We turn it into an art form. And so hip-hop is a continuum of that attitude of African-Americans being in a situation where they don't have much. These films, these forms of music, they're not made for them. So they look at music and they say, that music's cool, I'm going to make it me. I'm going to sample it, I'm going to add, I'm going to insinuate myself, I'm going to add my identity onto these identities that weren't created for me. And I think that that ingenuity and do-it-yourself sort of self-starter energy is consistent throughout the film.
We got to wrap up first film here at Sundance?
Yes.
All right.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Lots of luck.
Chris and I were both lucky to see it last night, and we both loved it.
It's changed your lives. You won't be able to sleep ever again.
Exactly.
Look at me. Yeah.
So go get a ticket if you can. It's an awesome film.
Fresh Dress is the name of the film. And its premiere is tomorrow.
Yes.
Tomorrow at the Mark.
Yes.
And it'll be shown three other times during the course of the week.
Wear your Saturday best.
And the Kangol hat and Gazelle shades. Exactly.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right. Sasha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's take a break for some underwriters and sponsors. You're listening to KPCW's Sundance Reel live at Whole Foods. We'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Mitch Martino.
And I'm Marta Mishral. We're from Park City High School.
Stay in touch with all things minors with our weekly Minor Nation Report.
We'll bring it to you every Monday morning during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher.
And in the afternoon with The Local View with Randy Barton.
Highlights, scores, schedules.
All things Park City Minors Athletics.
The Minor Nation Report is brought to you by
UPS Stores,
Rich Fine, Realtor,
and Elliott Work Group.
Go Miners!
This year, it's estimated that 375 million people will be affected by disasters, 50% more in an average year during the last decade. I'm Desi Mattel-Anderson of Field Innovation Team, a KPCW supporter. We're a disaster response nonprofit organization based in Utah. We help communities recover from disasters. We deploy experts in technology, music, design, and more to develop real-time disaster solutions. Volunteer, donate, and learn more at fieldinnovationteam.org.